In last week's study of Lech Lecha, Abraham moves from, he has come from Ur of Chaldees, he goes down to Canaan, into Egypt, he returns back. There he sets up his community, his tent. We hear in the story last week that he rescued his nephew Lot from a battle. We see a picture of Abraham's essence, his character and virtue, that is very, very, very beautiful. First, we see that he is one willing to go out on the limb to put his trust in God. When everyone else was idolatrous, when everyone else was worshiping, you know, gods of stone and wood, he left to go follow and to walk with God. And we understand this next concept, which sort of explains Abram's character and nature, is that he walked with God. And we gave sort of an understanding that the walking is the feet. The feet is the lowest part of the human body. And the feet being the lowest part of the human body, what that really represents is that Abraham, at the very fundamental, basic element of his life, did the things of God. He walked with God. And so the idea of us walking with God, if we want to have the same nature and character of Abraham, is that even in the smallest things, we focus on the details. The small things are important. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in our spiritual journey, we want to accomplish everything. You know, we get all excited about wanting to follow all the commandments of Hashem and want to do all these things, and he's just asking you just to simply walk with him. Master the small things. Walk with him, and that is what endears you to the heart of God. And one of the things we see is a picture of a man who quickly begins to endear himself to the heart of God. One aspect of having the faith of Abraham, anyone who has the faith of Abraham, can endear themselves to Hashem's heart. And it's hard for us to comprehend such a righteous man and then look at our own lives and go, well, how can I endear myself to Hashem's heart like Abraham did? But we see what made the difference and why God chooses Abraham for this great covenant that he's going to give him. It's because he says, and he followed the commandments, or he did all the things that God had asked him to do. So a picture emerges also, a man without a physical Torah scroll already began to follow Hashem in the oral Torah. He listened and he did. A very big thing. So we see him in his character, a man who was not afraid to be bold, to step out, to do what God asked him to do. We see a man destined to do what God had asked him to do at every level, whatever it required of him, he would do it because his faith was counted to him to righteousness because he believed God. He believed God. He actually believed when God said something, he meant it. And so we're going to see in this next portion, when the three angels appear to him, we see a very unique relationship this man has. I've been around some pretty particularly religious people who constantly remind me that they hear from God all the time. Have you been around someone's like, oh, God said this, God said that? And, yeah, no doubt they have possibly heard from God, or either that or the voices in their head is speaking to them, but at some level they believe God's speaking to them. And I wonder, wow, how is it that I don't hear this audible voice of God in my head all the time? Abram was at such a state, lack of cloudiness, having no television and internet and magazines and social, Facebook. Google Chrome, no one else at that time. And can you imagine a man, and could you imagine us, being completely uncluttered from the noise of life? Even our jobs are extremely noisy. We bring our work home with us. We carry it in our mind all the time. We carry all the troubles and sorrows of life. And then when you compound that upon the day-to-day routine of turning on a television, and some of you guys may do this, some may not, but to turn on and to watch hours of news media people kvetching about the end of the world and the economy is going to collapse, and the president doing this, the Congress doing that. And all of a sudden we realize that we have merely muddled up the voice of God. And I really do believe that one of the secrets that Avram had is learning to sit and look for opportunities to demonstrate the character and nature of God. Because what set him apart was this. His loyalty and love for God was matched by his compassion and chesed for his fellow man. That's how he demonstrated. In this story, we're going to see that right off the bat. If someone would start liking to read maybe verse 1, chapter 18, that would really be nice.
Hashem appeared to him in the plains of Mamre, while he was sitting at the entrance of the tent in the heat of the day. He lifted his eyes and saw, and behold, three men were standing over him. He perceived, so he ran toward them from the entrance of the tent, back toward the ground, and he said, "My Lord, if I find favor in your eyes now, please pass on away from your servant."
Okay, stop right there. We're in Bereshit 18. This is the Torah portion, Vayera. And Avraham just finished circumcising himself Ishmael. Ishmael's about 13 at the time. Avraham is sitting at the tent there in the cool of the evening. It says that Hashem appeared to him. Now we understand that no man has seen God. So when it says that Hashem appeared to Avraham, it means that the manifestation or the presence of Hashem came into proximity. He was getting ready to engage in a conversation with Hashem. Now as this story plays out, it's going to be very important that we recognize who all is involved. How many parties are going to be involved in this story? There's five. There is Hashem, there are the three angels, there's Avraham and Sarah. There are five individuals. On a reading of most people's English Bible, it's going to be confusing who's talking to whom and when are they talking. This is one of the reasons why that we find in Christian systematic theology where they superimpose ideas on it that is not what the text actually says. And today we will examine what the text actually says. So first, it says that Hashem appeared to him in the plains of Mamre, where he was sitting at the entrance of the tent in the heat of the day. He circumcised himself, it's hot, and there God comes to comfort this man who is in a time of suffering. And I can't imagine the suffering the man would be going through at this time. You know, and not only that, but it's not just him, but it's his son and all of his servants, right? So everybody's like laying around moaning in the hot sun. And there Hashem appears to him. And right at the time Hashem appears to him, he lifted his eyes and saw, and behold, three men. Notice these are three men. Why does it say three men and later on we see that it's angels? Because it's from Abraham's point of view.
Right.
He sees three men. When he sees three men, what does he think immediately? Ah, an opportunity to share
the hospitality
and the wisdom of God to these people. So, and behold, three men were standing over him. He perceived, so he ran toward from the entrance of the tent and bowed down to the ground. So what does it mean that they stood over him? Meaning he was sitting probably completely on the ground, maybe on a pillow, and he looks up and he sees as if they're like coming over the edge of the ground horizon that they are standing over him. So he gets up and he runs, which is an amazing feat in itself, bows down to the ground, and he says, "My Lord, if I find favor in your eyes now, please pass not away from your servant." Now, he uses the word Adonai or Adoni, right? Mm-hmm. Now, there will be some who will perceive, well, who is he talking to? Is he talking to the angels? Or is he talking to Hashem that he just left in the dust? You hear? You follow me? So he goes, "My Lord." Now, there's a couple of ideas on this. There's one idea, he's addressing the three men, right? But this is in the singular, "My Lord." And it appears that he's talking to the men. "Don't pass your servant by." He could be talking to the men. But at the same time, out of somewhat what appears to be courtesy, he is saying to Hashem, don't pass by your servant. Don't leave me while I'm here. I've got to go take care of business. So one of the lessons that we learn is Abraham is not so heavenly minded, he's no earthly good. He really believed that hospitality trumped everything in the physical world. Now you would say, well, how in the world does hospitality trump having a visit with the creator of the universe? The reason why that we say that is because that is the reason why that we're put on this earth, and Abraham was put on this earth, to be a light of God's loving kindness. And how can we do it if we're not demonstrating it? So the ultimate act of our relationship with Hashem is how we interact with people around us, how we demonstrate the loving compassion of God around us. So he says, let some water be brought and wash your feet and recline beneath the tree. He's speaking to the three men. I will fetch a morsel of bread that you may sustain yourself. Then go on. As much as you have passed your servant's way, they said, do so just as you have said. So they agreed. That's fine. Mm-hmm. So he brings a bowl, have their feet washed. But notice he uses the term, I will fetch a morsel of bread. This is a humble way, because when you find out what he fixed, it wasn't just a morsel, right?
Right.
So it's a kind way. I know that my grandmother used to say, oh, let me fix you a little bite to eat.
Right.
It was never a little bite to eat. You know, it was fried green tomatoes.
And,
you know, the whole nine yards could have fed a whole army, right? You do the same thing, I'm sure.
Right.
So the whole idea is, let me grab this morsel of bread that I may sustain you, then go, as much as you have passed your servant's way. They said, do so just as you have. So Abraham hastened to the tent of Sarah and said, hurry, 3 sheahs of meal, fine flour, knead and make cakes. Then Abraham ran to the cattle, took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the youth who hurried to prepare it. He took cream and milk and the calf which he had prepared and placed these before them. He stood over them beneath the tree and they ate. So here he brings them in to feed them. They said, where is Sarah, your wife? And he said, behold, in the tent. And he said, I will surely turn to you at this time next year, and behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Now, at this point, we need to ask the question, who is he hearing from, and who is he talking to, and who is speaking? So we have to really look close at the text. Now, Sarah was listening at the entrance of the tent, which was behind him. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, well in their years. The manner of woman had ceased to be with Sarah. And Sarah laughed at herself, saying, have I withered? Shall I again have declined delicate skin? And my husband is old. Hashem then said to Abraham, now who's speaking? So first it's one of the angels that says, I will come by this next year, and your wife will have a child. His wife, Sarah, thinks this is silly. I'm too old. And then God speaks to Abraham and says, why is Sarah laughing, saying, shall I in truth bear a child, though I have aged? Is anything beyond Hashem? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son. So, you have Abraham sitting there. Remember, Hashem came to Abraham. So already he was in the presence of the divine glory of Hashem. The three men come and eat a meal. One of the angels says, when I come by next year, your wife will be pregnant with it, will have a son. And then Sarah laughs, and then God asked Abraham, the three men are still sitting there. Why did she laugh? Why did she laugh? And then the angel repeats this again, right? I'm telling you, when I come by next year, do you see the different parties speaking here? The problem is, if you just get a little snapshot, you think it's all the same person doing all the interaction.
Right.
So here we understand that the angel speaks up again. Sarah denied it, saying, I didn't laugh, for she was frightened. But he said, no, you laughed indeed. So the men got up from there and gazed down towards Sodom, while Abraham walked with them to escort them. And Hashem said, shall I conceal from Abraham what I do? now that Abraham is surely to become great and a mighty nation, and all nations of the earth shall bless themselves by him. For I have loved him because he commands his children and his household after him that they keep the way of Hashem, doing charity and justice. What is the keeping of the commandments of God all sort of wrapped up in? The idea of charity and justice. In order that Hashem might then bring upon Abraham that which he had spoken of him. So here Abraham is standing here in the midst of the three individuals who looked to Sodom and they said, we have to go, we have a job to do. He now hears Hashem speaking to the three men that now he's recognizing these are not just three ordinary guys that are walking around. These are men on a mission. They are angels of God. God is now speaking openly. It'd be like us having a conversation and then you turn to someone and have sort of a conversation about an individual that's overhearing your conversation. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. So this is what Abraham's hearing. Why do you suppose that he felt it necessary to inform Abraham of what he's getting ready to do?
Because it's enough. Well, he says in the next verse why.
Yeah, well, go ahead. That's good. Go ahead.
But also his nephew was in Sodom.
His nephew was in Sodom. Mm-hmm. And the fact, we obviously know, that he's going to become a great nation.
Correct.
And a man with the responsibility of becoming a great nation needs to have input, or God allows him to give input on the decisions that happen within the physical world, which is a very powerful and amazing thing. Someone start reading there for me, please.
For I have known him because he commands his sons and his household after him that they should keep the way of the Lord to perform righteousness and justice, in order that the Lord bring upon Abraham that which he spoke concerning him. And the Lord said, since the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah has become great, and since their sin has become very grave, I will descend now and see whether according to her cry which has come to me they have done, I will wreak destruction upon them, and if not, I will know. And the men turned from there and went to Sodom, and Abraham was still standing before the Lord. And Abraham approached and said, will you even destroy the righteous with the wicked? Perhaps there are 50 righteous men in the midst of the city. Will you even destroy and not forgive the place for the sake of the 50 righteous men who are in its midst? Far be it from you to do such a thing as this, to put to death the righteous with the wicked so that the righteous should be like the wicked. Far be it from you. Will the judge of the entire earth not perform justice? And the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous men within the city, I will forgive the entire place for their sake. And Abraham answered and said, behold now, I have commenced to speak to the Lord, although I am dust and ashes. Perhaps the 50 righteous men will be missing 5. Will you destroy the entire city because of 5? And he said, I will not destroy it if there are 45. And he continued further to speak to him, and he said, perhaps 40 will be there, found there. And he said, I will not do it for the sake of the 40. And he said, please, let the Lord's wrath not be kindled, and I will speak. Perhaps 30 will be found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, behold now, I have desired to speak to the Lord. Perhaps 20 will be found there. And he said, I will not destroy for the sake of the 20. And he said, please, let the Lord's wrath not be kindled, and I will speak yet this time. Perhaps 10 will be found there. And he said, I will not destroy for the sake of the 10. And the Lord departed when he finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place.
Okay, let's stop there. This is the the first auction. Who are going to be 40, 40, 40, who are going to be 45, 40, sold, right? I mean, this whole bargaining thing. What's happening here is something incredible. Abraham, having full knowledge that there was not 40 people
right.
that were righteous, was seeing where he could get Hashem to. Even knowing there weren't even 10, but he's thinking, well, I know that he saved Noah and his family. There were just 7, so surely 7, surely 10. So the idea is he's bargaining down to the very last soul. Bargaining down to the very last one. Will you have mercy upon them? Now let me ask you, what is the difference between justice and mercy, or chesed? What is the difference between justice and chesed?
You don't deserve mercy.
Correct.
Right, justice everyone deserves.
Yes.
Everyone deserves justice. But it is through mercy that justice oftentimes is canceled or immuted, correct?
Right.
It would be like a person who goes before a judge who doesn't have any money at all. He's extremely poor. And there, during the course of a judgment that the judge puts on him, might tend to be lenient because this person has several children, and to put anything more on him would devastate his family. And it just, though justice needed to be done, mercy was seen in its place. And here we see that justice means that everyone there should die. But Abraham reminds Hashem that yes, justice does say that, but does justice say that the wicked, the just or the righteous should die with the wicked? It's a great reminder. And it should let us know that there was something unique about Lot. And let's talk about Lot for just a moment, because this is really important for us to talk about. What does Lot represent? We said this last week. He represents the Yetzer Hara, right? Mm-hmm. The evil inclination. Was Lot, the nephew of Abraham, was he righteous?
Compared to people in Sodom? Yeah.
Yes. So he was righteous. He was righteous.
But he wasn't merciful for the strangers.
That's a very good possibility, but that could be debated a little bit. But you're close. You're very close to it. Let me explain to you. You're right at it. Let me explain. He was a righteous man, but his environment began to dictate his decision-making process.
Right.
His influence. Birds of a feather flock together.
Right.
If you're around self-centered people that are egotistical, that are constantly stealing and destroying other people's lives, even though you do every tenet of Torah law, it's going to affect. When push comes to shove, when the emergency takes place, when the big balloon goes up, you will do what everybody else around you is doing and not what God calls you to do. Does it make sense? You and I are a product of the environment that we live in. And that is why it is so very important that those of us who have attached ourselves to Torah and to the yoke of heaven, that we, even though we're living in the world, that we maintain a level of kadoshim, of holiness and separation from the world. Why? Because whenever difficulties come and trials come, and the hard decisions that you're going to make will be made through the filter of the environment that you're most influenced by. Lot represents the type of person who does the things that God commands him to do, but deep down in his heart, there is still lust. Even though he does not rape, he still lusts. Though he does not steal, he still has, what's the word for it, he covets.
Well,
does that make sense?
He's more or less pressured to do the easy route.
Correct.
Rather than...
But he's still allowing, what I read about his character, he's still allowing that, though. Allowing it to be a choice of his.
Absolutely.
You know, he hasn't casted it all the way out yet.
But by all
even
means.
Even with the girls.
So we see the story begin to unfold here, is that when judgment comes upon Sodom and Gomorrah, we see that that Lot reacts in a very unique way. He says in verse 1, the two angels came to Sodom in the evening and was sitting at the gate of Sodom. Now Lot saw and stood up to meet them, and he bowed face to the ground, and he said, behold, now my lords, turn about, please, to your servant's house, spend the night, wash your feet, and then wake up early in the morning and go your way. Now, why is Lot doing this? It's because he's doing what is right. He's doing what's right. This is what a righteous man does. He does it out of this spirit of hospitality that his uncle taught him. So he's teaching them, come in, make yourself comfortable. But this was not the attitude of the people of Sodom. People of Sodom would have robbed, maybe sodomized these people, raped them, killed them. You know, only Hashem knows what would have happened. So he tries to urge them. Watch this. He says, and they said, no, rather we will spend the night in the square. Now what? Think about how insane that is. Can you imagine being in the worst crime-ridden area of town and someone says, come in my house and spend the night? And you go, no, I'm gonna sleep out here next to the crack house. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, right? So he urged them very much. So they turned toward him and came to his house, and he made a feast for them and baked matzahs. And they ate. So he did another good act. He brings properly cooked bread to them. They had not yet laid down when the townspeople, the Sodomites, converged upon the house from the young to old. All the people from every quarter, they called to Lot and said to them, where are these men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we might know them. What term, we might know them? What does that mean?
Not something good.
The intimate.
Intimate.
Yeah, the intimate act.
Act. Yes. And it wasn't intimate as in love. It was right. Sexual.
Correct.
Physicality.
Yeah, thank you. Lot went out to the entrance and shut the door behind him and said, I beg you, my brothers, not to act wickedly. See now that I have two daughters who have never known a man. I shall bring them out to you and do to them as you please, but these men do nothing as much as they have come under the shelter of my roof. And they said, stand back. Then they said, this fellow came to sojourn and would act as judge and act as a judge. Now we will treat you worse than them. They pressed exceedingly upon the man, upon Lot, and they approached to break the door. The men stretched out their hand and brought Lot into the house with them and closed the door. And the men who were at the entrance of the house, they struck with blindness from small to great, and they tried vainly to find the entrance. Then the men said to Lot, whom else do you have there, a son-in-law, your sons, or your daughters? All that you have in the city removed from the place, for we are about to destroy the place from their outcry, for their outcry has become great before Hashem, so Hashem has sent us to destroy it. So the angels reveal at that point, look, we're here to bring destruction upon the city. You need to get out of Dodge. He tells them that. Yes, sir.
Going back to Abraham bargaining with God for 50 to 10, okay, so there wasn't, he didn't even check. He was bartered without even checking,
right.
Looking. Okay, so now we know who escaped, Lot, Abraham, Sarah. So I'm just wondering, it says 10 men. It didn't say anything about women, so were all the women corrupt, or were they burned up with Sodom and did not escape?
No, the whole idea is the 10 men actually is the idea of a minion, a complete number of individuals. And so it would include also the women and children that would be attached to the men. So that's the comment.
So even though they might have been, say, righteous or not bad people, they perished just because of their association with their husband.
Well, no. I mean, that was the same with Noah and the flood. Noah's family was not considered righteous, yet they were saved because of Noah.
But there was no, what I'm getting at, there's no one saved, even of the women and children in Sodom.
Correct. Correct.
And I'm thinking of
everything, because notice that it says, that the narrative that we just read tells the story.
Mm-hmm.
It says all came from young to old. Young to old. My goodness. The whole society was absolutely a cauldron of sexual immorality and injustice. The narrative really gives us the picture that we have of Sodom. That here they knew that two strangers were in town. What did they want to do? They wanted to rob them of their dignity and steal from them and kill them. That is just what they did. That's just how they did it. And this wasn't, I don't even think this was about sexual pleasure. This was about a community set of values and pride. that if you come into our city, we're going to do what we do to anybody that comes in without permission.
Even women were endorsing it.
Correct. Absolutely. They were like animals.
They were animals.
Yes, absolutely. So the whole thing was correct. Listen, when we look at Noah's the corruption of the earth at the time of Noah, and then you look at this corruption and you see Hashem do absolutely devastates these people. I'm telling you. We look around and we go, oh, well, you know, I went to this city and it's horrible. I don't know how God hasn't judged it. And the reason why he hasn't is there's righteous people there.
Right.
When there is no righteous, I'm telling you, there is no righteous. It affects it to the very core. There are cultures that we can go to right now in a modern time in other countries in which parents sell their children for sex slaves.
Yes.
Think nothing of it. Husbands and wives... having no fidelity in their marital relationship. They murder, they steal, they rob. These cultures are still alive in our world. But why does God not completely destroy them today? Because within those cultures are people that love God with their whole heart and are trying to do their very best. Right here and then, Betty.
When I was reading in the commentary, it was talking about the people in Sodom and Gomorrah and those cities that were involved, they wanted the people that were wealthy and rich that would bring abundance to their community. They didn't want the people to offer them.
Right.
And so their way of doing it was to harass them, do all the things that you just spoke about in order to make it very uncomfortable, and they would leave.
Right.
And they didn't want these people, and they didn't want you being kind to anyone, being hospitable to anyone that had nothing to offer the city. And they didn't want you feeding the poor or anything like that. It reminded me of what sometimes has been legislated in
our own
Houston,
city.
Yes,
right.
Of not being able to feed the poor. Correct.
The poor and stuff.
I mean,
same
thing.
Really, really whacked me big time.
Yep.
No, absolutely. I was talking today with an acquaintance, and we were just having this discussion of the state of our community and the world that we live. And we were comparing them, you know, we're both sons of the 80s and 70s, and so we recognize that a lot has changed just in the past 15 years in this country. And he said, you know, I look around me and I see our whole society crumbling at its core. Because it's losing its sense of justice. I mean, think about it. Wrong is right, and right is wrong.
Yeah.
We see it in front of our eyes.
And losing
the
sense of
hesed. Absolutely. We're losing the sense of loving kindness
Correct.
Toward people.